Just a real quick announcement here before we get started. I know a bunch of you had asked me about the return of Syncbook Radio show Pentimental. I just want to let you folks know there is a new episode out, episode 17. John McGuire interviews Dr. Kirby Surprise. So if you want to check that out, head on over to thesyncbook.com. Today, for Always Record episode 152, John McGuire returns to help me welcome Frank Zero.
Go see what the boys in the back room will have, and tell them I'm having the same. Go see what the boys in the back room will have, and give them the poison they name. And when I die, don't spend my money on flowers and my picture in a frame. Just see what the boys in the back room will have, and tell them I sighed. And tell them I cried, and tell them I died of the same.
Let's start here, if you don't mind. John has not seen World on a Wire or read your article, but he is familiar with John Lilly's work. But you just recently did a Tumblr article, a three-part Tumblr article, sort of addressing some of these things. What's the URL where people could read that?
That's actually our main blog. So that's just www.the0nightwordpress.com. And so it seems like a Tumblr because I went a little I'll simplify it as I went a little crazy with the colors. But there's so many pictures on one of the four or five articles in the Echo from Valis series that it almost seems like it's a Tumblr. And that's part of my new kind of sync approach that I've been using for like a year or two, but I just realized I'm kind of coming into my own, and that's sort of my sync style. And that's what I was talking about in Pyramid when I was saying that my approach to sync is becoming like industrial music or something, because I predominantly just want to use images and explain as little as possible and see if people can just, scan past 10 or 20 images in the same way they would like read a comic book, but see the coherence and the sync just from the images. So like, a Steve Wilner movie or something effectively, but just in the still images.
And just to clarify, when you say 0 night, so it's the number 0, but the word night is Knight, yes?
Yes, I'm sorry. Night, like a medieval night. Yeah, for sure.
So, and yeah, I know, and I guess I thought it was Tumblr because I know you usually do a lot of stuff on Tumblr. But yeah, I
A
totally
lot of
get
the
how that
X-Men
be.
stuff,
I totally get
the
how
more
that's.
X-Men stuff is on Tumblr.
Yeah, I totally get how that's becomes a sort of stylistic choice. And like I said, I thought it was very effective. So, here's something. If you mentioned this in your blog post, then I apologize. This is probably something obvious, but when so you're talking about John Woolley's experiences. Particularly the ketamine float tank experiences, where he this is from Adam Gorightly's sort of write up. He talks about John Lilly taking the ketamine to get rid of his migraines, and that it essentially works. And then it's so effective that it spurs him to do this whole deeper research with ketamine, which is one of the things he's most known for. I mean, obviously he's got his sort of scientific credibility with his work with dolphins and whatever, but most people, at least in our circles, probably know him as the ketamine guy with the Earth Coincidence Control Office and the sort of more psychonautic research. But so you talk about this idea of the migraines and Echo, and so then I started watching World on a Wire, and my wife and I just finished it last night. Man, that was fantastic. Thank you for the recommendation, first off.
Surely, surely.
And I thought it's interesting because the guy in the movie keeps suffering from migraines, and then this was the part I don't remember if you mentioned or not. Towards the end of the movie, when he's on the run from the police, he uses a quote-unquote code name when the guy in the car says to him, "What's your name?" He goes, "I'm Mr. Echo."
Wow, that totally slipped past me.
Yeah, I
That's
was like,
awesome.
what the fuck? He actually says his name is Echo.
Yeah,
So,
yeah.
I thought that was pretty fucking interesting. What can I ask, what sort of got you on this John Willie bent currently?
Sure. There's the A.K. Wilkes article where he was comparing all the original sort of synchromystics before our generation came along and started calling it such. So, you know, the Robert Ant Wilson, John C. Lilly, Philip K. Dick, Timothy Leary, you know, this kind of spans from remote viewers to other original psychonauts to Discordianism. But that article, as well as Mr. Gorightly's, essentially got me really vastly interested in how Valis, or an entity that works like that, whether it be, and I understand that it can perfectly be, the Black Knight satellite and weird artificial intelligence represented by a female that comes up over and over and over in different fictions and things like that, related to, like I'm saying, the Russians in real life found this thing called the Black Knight satellite. Tesla had kind of a lock on it and was curious about it. And then Philip K. Dick seems rather convinced that's where the Valis downloads are coming from. So I became really interested in the, is this actually an artificial intelligence that's a weird female Gaia mind speaking to us from Sirius B or something through some orbiting space junk around the Earth? Or is this, in fact, because it's in the same year, the final application, or rather direct application of brain to skull, excuse me, what is it? When you communicate directly with the inside of the brain using either the sort of bones and the structure of the ear, or you're using some metal device or something in a room and you're kind of beaming that and you're making people think they're having some kind of divine channeling, direct to skull implant or download or something is the term I'm looking for, where you
Sure,
just
wasn't
kind of.
there even in Japan a few years ago they came out with this idea what they called the bone phone, right? Which is basically instead of a the Bluetooth earpiece, you could just basically receive the calls using vibrations in your skull.
Correct. And so I think intelligence organizations were working on that, or have been working on that, for 4 to 5 decades. And on both sides of the application, can we have agents speak to each other either through psychic means or through means whereby they don't have to say things out loud and can use technology or something that can't be tracked? I'm sorry, I forgot the other aspect of that that I was going to mention, but. Oh, I'm sorry. Or can we use on enemy combatants or enemy agents something whereby they think they're having a schizophrenic breakdown, or we can affect a region of the brain where they may just freak out and become violent or depressed or something like that? All the soft kill methods under psychotronics are the same sort of technology you would want to use, you know, to make a room full of televangelist fans or a UFO cult think they're receiving divine messages, and then, you know, you can COINTELPRO from a distance, if you will.
Then this ties in with the dolphin research, right? Because John and I spoke earlier, and we were talking about the Sega Genesis game Echo the Dolphin, which of course is spelled ECCO,
Right, yeah.
not ECHO, not like Echo. Like, because I was saying, obviously, it could be an quote unquote unintentional reference to John Willie. It could be like echolocation type thing that dolphins are known for their sonar. And in the video game, he even uses this sort of sonar attack, or for lack of a
Yeah.
better term, right? But then the fact that they spell it ECCO, like John Willie's Earth Coincidence Control Office Echo, is fascinating. And
Yeah, and if you look at the plot, you know, it's really the plot is really telling of they
yes.
definitely meant to bring up John C. Lilly, you know.
Right, the plot is fucking space aliens, right? He's fighting what is essentially the evil machine alien intelligence, right?
Yeah, so he's sort of pit against the Archons, and he's also, you know, before the game even really gets off the ground, or later versions of the game, the sort of new age explanation for like the dolphin's relation to space and aliens and stuff anyway is already bordering on like Corey Good or like contemporary David Wilcock sounding stuff about a secret space program and orbs that are outside of our atmosphere to protect us from aliens and all this stuff like that, that people write off as complete madness, is the, you know, the basis for these games, or some of these games, particularly Echo or whatever. And then we're just kind of left to collect the pieces. Okay, they were definitely talking about John C. Lilly, but did they see these trends coming in New Age thought and in bridging that with conspiracy areas? And, you know, like, how did they get the Corey Good stuff when that only started a year ago? And it's pretty clear cut in the game, you know? But I guess there's always just these irrelevant, like, New Age philosophies floating around that can sound really cool in the beginning of Echo, but can be really haunting because how similar they are to, like, you know, join the Heaven's Gate cult sort of mentality or something. But yeah, like I'm saying, I think the game was definitely in the know there.
So I'm thinking, like, the Echo, again, we sort of have this the sense of, I don't know, you know, like vibratory communication, right? So there's the, you know, your idea of this sort of, again, I'm just going to refer to it as this bone phone type technology. If we have a better phrase for it, let me know. All right, so this like sort of direct into the skull, it's not really going into the, if I understood in the technology correctly, it's not really going into the brain or even like the auditory canal. It's really striking vibrations into the bones is how it works. So it works on this sort of vibratory principle.
I think they figured them all out, you know, just to, like in the psychotronic field, I think they figured out all of the above, you know.
So
have you heard,
go ahead, John.
Have you heard of, it's not exactly the same thing, but there was an American embassy that was being bombarded by some sort of Russian research, whether they were actually affecting anything within this embassy or not. They were targeting it with what is often called scalar wave technology now, or what,
yeah,
a lot of different ways of conceiving of it, but it's similar. A lot of people will say, well, they're elves or extra low frequency waves or whatever, but scalar waves are these weird phenomenon and they can do this sort of weird shit. They fuck with brain waves and allegedly and so on. And allegedly the Russians were inducing cancerous growths in some of them as well.
Yeah, that supposedly is all factually backed. And then that was another excuse for us to jump 30 steps ahead and say, okay, we're already doing this stuff in secret, but now that we have on file that the Russians are this far evolved, you know, we have an excuse to go 20 steps ahead. And you'll find that pattern with remote viewing or nuclear warfare or whatever, because the Cold War was just a constant. You know, sometimes I look at the Cold War as an excuse itself to just constantly update and use as much money on as possible and agreed on at some level between us and Russia to just further the militarization of the occult, of psychic powers, of things I've been mentioning, like remote viewing. And then there's these individual instances like where there's enough documentation to say that people in that embassy were messed with and did wind up having health problems. And so
you could say, well, it's coincidence, right, as the skeptical response would be. But if you look at cause and effect, and if there is even some cause and effect there, it's interesting. So it doesn't have to be completely true to reveal something that's going on.
Yeah, sure.
And then of course then there's the speculation that those are being used as weather engineering, and so this all gets tied into one big ball of shit. Whether it's all connected, it's hard to say, but people logically jump from point to point with that.
I think there's enough stuff on the books with if anybody sees Deadpool, Michael Aquino's in there repeatedly, but I feel like a lot of this is tied to what's on the books with Michael Aquino, what's on the books with John Alexander. They're public speaking about anything from Satanism to the relation between psi and UFOs, and then all the documents like Mind War and developing the soft kill and stuff like that. I feel like we have enough that there shouldn't be skeptics. There should be people who work with the documentation and either say, you know, are either trying to say, no, this all of these documents have been forged from different parts of the world about governments trying to further this stuff, or I don't know, people are so uncomfortable with this material that they're just willing to deny it without the research. But I mean, I've personally been able to scare myself awake for days a number of times going into how far Aquino wanted to go with the PSYOPs concept, and the fact that that went way beyond what he learned PSYOPs were, and that being, you know, something to scare the enemy or confuse a populace into going to war, something like that, and turning it into electronic means to control large populations. And so that's been patented in corporate technologies that beam directly into the skull and give you a secret message from a skyscraper away about a movie coming out or whatever, which is already being used. It's just not talked about and how disturbing it is. All the way to the applications that we have on the books, that in Iraq and in different areas we've been at war, we've, you know, put these devices on the back of Hummers and tried everything from making a crowd of people puke from a mile away to giving everybody a disturbing feeling like they should get out of the area, like the sensors and things that are supposedly deployed around places like Area 51.
You mentioned Deadpool. I haven't seen the movie. I don't know that I will. I used to love Deadpool comics back in the day. I don't know if you were a Deadpool comic fan.
Yeah, surely.
I stopped. So if you were a Deadpool comic fan, maybe you know what I mean by this. There was the when he first got his own series, there was a run that was written by a writer named Joe Kelly. That was fucking incredible. And then who took over after him? I think it was that Buddy Scalera? And
sorry, go on.
I know Buddy took over shortly thereafter. And I think after Buddy's run, I stopped reading it. But I noticed at some point, I've seen in the last few years some sort of Deadpool media where they've made as part of his character that he's basically like multiple personality, like he has, they'll give him like different captions or different voices, so he has like the sort of straight man voice and the wacky zany Deadpool voice. And did they choose to run with that in the movie?
Yes, but not to the extreme that of when I stopped reading. So like I was really into the X-Force stuff, and you know, Deadpool started this sort of unrelated badass, and then made his way to graphic novel after graphic novel, working with a writer who I believe is superb, but I didn't get into these because the schizophrenia multiple personality thing got too silly even for
me. That's what I'm saying. That really turned me off.
Yeah, he was only fighting like silly characters who almost had, you know, who were disposable or something for one reason or another, and pulling all these up to deal with the schizophrenic, I'm about to call him Daredevil, Deadpool. In the film, they do like the film's perfect in my eyes. It's like, it's constantly funny for those people who just like the multiple personality, you know, goofy slapstick Deadpool, but the way he fights and the way everything else is done is just so much like if you were just a kid who read that X-Force stuff, you'd be so stoked that they made a movie that, you know, stayed true to at least those aspects of it. But like I'm saying, I thought the movie was great. And then it's got so many Easter eggs and hidden suggestions that if you're up on MK Ultra and Trauma-Based Mind Control and Satanic Ritual Abuse, and you know who Michael Aquino is, there'll be that layer. And then if you know a lot about the X-Men, there's this other layer. And the stuff's hidden background in visuals and stuff about Aquino. Deadpool says directly to Aquino's face. And I don't know, it's all sort of mixed in there really well.
So the reason I was asking about that is because, you know, obviously the character's background as a sort of Weapon X, you know, they dealt with the whole trauma-based mind control, implanted false memories and whatever, but the sort of schizophrenia, I don't even call it schizophrenia, more like a multiple personality angle that they added to him at some point, while that was a turnoff for me from a writing standpoint, it sort of, it's almost like lazy, not only lazy writing, but it was, instead of him bantering with people, they're just bantering with himself, so you could, you know, it was kind of bullshit. But it sort of adds something. The reason I brought it up is the idea of when we talk about say, government's broadcasting voices into your head, mm-hmm. That sort of seems like a pretty direct hit in that respect.
And then if you try and base mind control someone, destroy them at a young age in order to shatter them and put the pieces back together, you get the same thing with the multiple personality or dissociative identity disorder. And that's supposedly, you know, controversial and under debate, but it seems pretty clear cut to me what you're doing to get someone to result in that. And then, you know, anything from using electronic means to make it worse to do enough to somebody, you know, when they're a kid or something, and they'll constantly be working with fractures and parts of stuff instead of a whole.
Why isn't it more okay, so is it, just to be devil's advocate, how widespread do you think it is? Because if that like was a implemented technology, wouldn't you think it would be going on at all levels on and targeted against all people? So are we under it?
It is.
Are we under a spell right now, and this whole conversation is it's hard to say, like, I mean, I'm not saying these things don't exist. I'm saying that I think they already have enough control of people where they don't need to use them.
I think that 70% of the stuff was thrown away. I'm sorry to cut you off. Go on.
Yeah, no, that's probably true. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it's just didn't work like they thought, but I mean, they must have hit the lottery somewhere with all the money they
had.
Sure. Weird projects.
I think it's that large scale control whereby when you control people's worldview enough, reality shows and ridiculous politicians and preposterous things that are supposed to be fact and going on as foreign policy or whatever, like everyone sort of swallows that up. And if you release things that you expect people to freak out and try to take back the country over, if you talk, you know, on a monthly basis about predator drone strikes on civilians, and you're saying that you have a PRISM program inside a shady intelligence agency like the NSA, and that, you know, there's these supposed whistleblowers and they're trying to tell us our whole world's coming down because of the deep state, and no one cares at all. I mean, like, everyone much rather subscribe to the next football game, if not the next episode of X-Files or whatever, than they ever would really getting sort of pinned down with the facts here and knowing what's going on. So sure, during the Cold War, you know, I think there were, you know, a couple thousand people trained minimally in sort of a Manchurian sense, where they didn't know they'd be trained. These skills are hidden like a sleeper cell in some way. And this could have been for an actual Cold War application against the Russians, for desert warfare, for special forces, kids that didn't know they were playing Call of Duty 8 years to be trained for something like this or whatever. And then space warfare and stuff that people come back explaining they never joined the military yet. They've been trained in this and they, you know, they have it in this alternate personality or whatever. I'm not saying I believe all of those people, but I've looked at enough of the facts to know that it would have been constructive or to their advantage to the position they thought they were cornered in. And I say they, I mean like the secret government and the government and the military or whatever. They would have been training thousands and thousands fight a war without knowing they would be, in case something went down like this. And then, you know, Aquino would come up with another technology where it's like, hey, we're not just going to beam people in the KGB and, you know, piss them off and make them have a fight while they're playing cards so we can get away with this mission. It just becomes throw away all those individual applications, throw away the files we have on individuals, keeping this much data on individuals. This is all done digitally now. We know if someone's stepping out of the parameters of what we want people talking about, domestic and foreign policy. If they disagree with us, we already know that. We already have that collected digitally. If they disagree with us and bought any, you know, fertilizer or things for a farm that could be made into a bomb, that's already been collected by a computer, and there's an agent somewhere that has a little tab on the side of their computer that says, you know, this person could become an enemy combatant or considered a terrorist or whatever. So with that type of almost Minority Report control system, and with the people within that control system swallowing whole the Nazi idea of the worldview being replaced by ridiculous entertainment in a Roman Colosseum or football, as I always like to make that analogy, whatever, you definitely don't need to
has
be
football,
on an individual basis.
As a metaphor, I would think UFC has replaced football as a Colosseum metaphor, no?
I think
actually
you're
have
right
men
in the type
beating
of
each other to blood, bloody pulps on TV. I feel like anytime I see that, I'm like, holy fuck, that is about as explicit as a Coliseum metaphor as you can get.
I think that's a separate kind of programming. It's to make people who want to be manly men, or people who are manly men, I don't know, want to or understand that the rules of the world are based off of that really extreme. I think even something like UFC or UFC plus WCW and all its ridiculousness, or whatever wrestling federation they have now, you can add a few these things together, and it doesn't equal the mass hypnosis and involvement by so many nations and individuals who otherwise wouldn't care about sports or fighting or violence or whatever to the Roman Colosseum. I like to use that comparison because I feel like everybody in Rome goes in the Colosseum, and you can basically do anything with Rome you want while everyone's that focused on the game. And the game these days is in the football game is a worse distraction than everyone's individual cell phone put together. You know, I mean, you just lose people's attention and hours and devotion over fantasy football teams and the way they've made it personable now for, I guess, people who wouldn't have cared about it 10 or 20 years ago. I see that as the mass distraction device. But you're right. The level of violence and thinking that, you know, violence is the answer, knowing that people are going to get really hurt and bleed, whereas football, you're just, you know, hoping you see some cool injury, is the way people like to think of it, or something. It's still much more rare than tuning into UFC and being like, okay, you know, these guys only understand survival of the fittest. You know,
can we take this back a little bit into the realm of World on a Wire, the virtual reality sort of idea? I want to pitch you guys my conspiracy theory. Of something that seems really obvious to me. I had seen Windows did a sort of product announcement, and I forget what their technology was called, where they show, they do this whole thing where they show a guy basically interacting with holograms in a room, right? And it's all user interface technology, but based on your environment. So you set it up in your apartment, in the example. And the guy, you know, puts his Skype call up on the wall. He uses hand gestures and whatever to put it on the wall. And he can play Minecraft 3D, hologram Minecraft on the kitchen table. And then at some point he plays this video game of these sort of like robotic spiders coming into the room and he shoots at them. And a guy at my job who's super into the technology trends is super excited about this HoloLens, which just got tons of funding. He said they raised $40 billion. Now, I haven't verified those numbers, but like he's just like a quote-unquote normal person, not into conspiracies at all, but just following tech news. And so he's seeing this as like they're really trying to go forward with this technology. And again, he was talking about this idea of environment-based, that you could be playing, some zombie shoot-em-up in your apartment, right? But I said, the thing that just immediately leaps to mind when you have holograms in a room attacking people, I was thinking, A, how easy that would be to drive someone fucking crazy to think that they're under attack. But the other side of that is, you know, you can have someone commit a murder and be like, oh, I thought this was part of the game. You know, at what point does someone pull out a fucking baseball bat and bludgeon someone thinking it's a hologram or, you know, it's again, part of the game, right? If you, once you've immersed yourself into that, or you've allowed almost like a, it's just sort of like a weird vampire metaphor. Once you allowed the holographic combatants into your living space, would you have control over that game? And that to me seems like, if you want to take that into the realm of conspiracy or just some sort of news story that we'll have to face down the road, you know, just man kills wife with, you know, baseball bat and blames it on HoloLens or something. Wherever you want to sort of see that future going, these are things we will have to face. I don't know how near future or how distant future, but these are certainly the levels that we're pushing towards. And that sort of World on the Wire analogy there was really poignant to me, as you see, once he's sort of realizing that these people are not people, or stops thinking of them as people, there's that scene where he asks a woman for a light for his cigarette, and then a crane falls and crushes her, and he just picks up the lighter, tosses it back down, and walks away. At that point in the movie, he's supposed to think that that's still a real person, but he actually doesn't give a shit. And I would assume even less so once he realizes that's not a real person. So, again, it's this idea of when we're getting, you know, I don't know, I'm not the kind of guy who does the research of what actual government agencies are planning actual, you know, tests or controls. I'm more the sort of focused on the zoom out of what is the trends, not only psychologically, sociologically, with how we are relating to things and what we're okay with, and at what level we're, you know, okay with thinking of our fellow human beings as, you know, just virtual. I guess I'm basically saying being stripped of our humanity.
I think that's important. It was important to have a zombie trend before the holographic, nearly schizophrenic tendencies of not only, you know, Google Glass and all these things like this, but the new video game systems coming out, one of which demands you don't have any furniture or any paintings or pictures or anything in the room, and you simply have the system. And the system illustrates and puts you in this atmosphere. It takes up the whole room, and then you interact with that. I've always thought, just from what I've read, that, and this will seem extreme, and I understand that, and could be entirely science fiction, you know, but I have always thought of a lot of the, like, the school shootings and the mass shootings as, and I know one or two of the cases, particularly the people were into neuropsychology and flash and internet movie players, subliminal effect on the mind and things, and then they wound up being the shooters themselves. But, and, you know, their parents had military and high up secret government sort of links or whatever, you know, like in stuff that's pretty direct, you know, like one parent worked for DARPA and one parent worked for the CDC or something. But I think with a lot of this stuff, we're getting into really dangerous territory, you know, like you're saying might happen. I think we're very much already there. I think the ability to make someone think that they're surrounded by zombies and that they're in a state that's somewhere between Percocet and PlayStation 5, which is not out yet, right? So they're in this, like, ecstatic, opiate-like state that's been turned on by the same sort of devices that would control the other parts of the person's mind, so to speak. And then they would see zombies around them, so they're like, they don't think they're in a real place. They're feeling dreamy. They see the zombies that they have one objective to shoot, and they get points, you know? So I feel like in a lot of these shootings or whatever, we're dealing with a person who thinks they're in a type of holographic interface. They think they're playing Call of Duty, and the first person they shoot disappears after they shoot them, and they see points fly up into the air. And so they shoot two or three more people, and they see the points, and they hear a little ding-a-ding. You know, I'm going back to Super Nintendo with the sense of awards you're getting for a video game here. But what I'm saying is they're not seeing any of the gore, any of the violence. They can't hear people screaming around them, you know, because they're doing a horrifying act. They're just sort of stuck in the game. And if you have someone like that, and you know you're going to be shooting them by the end of the event, or you're going to lock them up just to come out to trial, so that the only thing makes it back to public is the public is pictures of someone extremely drugged out who can't begin to explain themselves or what they think happened or whatever. We're dealing with a weird situation there. But just to come back to reality, you know, within a couple of months or next Christmas or whatever, we should be dealing in multiple different game publishers or system makers turning to virtual reality. And then I don't know how much they're going to increase the direct to skull sort of communication that I'm talking about, where, like, there's places in New York that already have ads that beam into your skull for a block, but if you walk a step to the left, you turn around, the ad stops repeating itself. Taking into account that these ads do not announce themselves, they're not They don't say, you know, coming this fall, and you go, oh, this is a movie preview. They just start with, you know, insane sounds from The Exorcist and people falling downstairs. And then maybe by the end, they'll clue you in that this is related to a product. But if you're a person prone to any type of mental illness, particularly if all of a sudden you actually start hearing voices and like you can't go home to your family or go home to your friends and be like, oh, did anybody else notice like the Exorcist sounds between, you know, 13th Street and whatever, you know, you're bound to have everyone thinking you're pretty insane pretty quick. But if we look into the field that supposedly is mostly based off of people who are delusional, but I've seen, again, military documentation for the application of these weapon systems, things that I don't think these people were saying are delusional have even looked into. We just have people complaining, calling themselves targeted individuals, saying that anything from a you know, decades-old methodology of gang stalking to a much more preferred psychotronic method of heating up everyone's body parts or heating up people's brains in the same neighborhood. A lot of this happens in very, very poor income areas. And then what happens sort of everywhere else is, you know, people are hearing voices or they're hearing things related to telling them to warding or warning them off certain research or being curious about what the voices is and looking that up and beginning to scratch the surface of the documentation I'm talking about. And then, you know, being attacked that much more. And this can be, this is rather pronounced in fields of people who are established and intelligent. People respect them for what they do. So, you know, there's ufology and there's all this fringe stuff. But I think even like veterans looking into military applications they don't approve of, or other people currently in the military trying to come to terms with this morally or whatever, are all speaking out against it or trying to find out more about it.
So can we take this, John, unless you got anything to can we take this to John Willie for a moment? Because John Willie, and you mentioned Vallis and Philip K. Dick and all this sort of stuff. So these were guys presumably, or maybe I want to sort of get your take on this. You know, do we assume they are victims of some sort of military technology? Certainly Philip K. Dick thought he might have been. But, you know, they're essentially getting transmissions. Even your, you know, John Willie is getting two types of transmissions, right? He's got the quote-unquote good guys at Echo and the bad guys at, what is it?
SSI.
Solid State Intelligence, right. So, but both of which can beam sort of messages into his head.
Both men saw the extreme opposites too. They thought they were talking to, you know, Gaia, Earth, Love, Mother, Captain Planet being, and they thought they were also talking to Fourth Reich ruled by computer Archon beings.
Totally, yeah. Which, and you know, you've used the word Archon a few times. I mean, I can't help but, right, is a, you know, when we discuss ideas of virtual reality, it's a completely Gnostic sort of future. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we not see Gnosticism as the religion of the future once virtual reality is a dominant technology? How do we not see something like that? You know, even if it's, how should I say, even if it's, for lack of a better term, just the predictable paranoia of, say, like the characters in World on a Wire, where you would have to wonder, if once we have a convincing virtual reality environment, once the technology is good enough that it's convincing, you would have to start to wonder, right? Even the average fucking person would have to start to wonder, where does the reality stop and start? And, you know, is this thing that we're in right now a digital or some other matrix, for lack of a better term?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, I think that is, because we're, you know, you're talking about if we knew they were at that level, and I think we, the most of the documentation says we knew they were at that level or, you know, aggressively trying to achieve that in like 1963. So when you're looking at CIA-backed psychologist and scientist. You have Jose Delgado in the 50s and 60s doing the first actual chip implants where you can control animals and humans through microprocessor implant through somewhere in the body. And then you have Michael Persinger in the 80s, don't quote me on that, saying that he's come up with a methodology, multiple different methods, but one that he's rather direct and open about, in his words, to either make a person feel like they're meeting God or make them feel like they were abducted by aliens. That's a direct quote from him. Again, that's a CIA contracted scientist telling us that 20 years before we're having this conversation, we already know how to make a person completely convinced that they're alien beings from another world in their bedroom and taking them off to somewhere. So the virtual world and how we think of it in terms of metaphysics, and then the idea of the Archons and the fact that what we consider human agencies of the Archons already have the technology to be obsessed with and run 24/7, the deep technocratic state that all these writers feared would one day be the future. Well, that future is, you know, super here. And then how they would manipulate that. I don't know. I feel like we have a disconnect where we're like, oh, they manipulate our voting and they might do those experiments on people that they're rightfully capturing in black sites because they think are terrorists, but that surely wouldn't be like a widespread technology, you know, and those people could just get in an argument with the corporations that are already using these applications, you know, if not to induce schizophrenia, to have a really clever way of selling a horror movie. I don't
know. Yeah, and, you know, and to be blunt, I mean, people want escapism, you know, I mean, I think if the last 10 years have shown me anything, you know, people are not particularly upset about having their privacy violated at every given moment. They're not, you know, out in the streets protesting over NSA or like any of the mainstream explicit violations they've come to accept as completely okay for the sake of safety. And then from the entertainment standpoint, I mean, you know, like, which, you know, how, what percentage of the male population is going to say no to whether it's fucking a sex bot or a convincing hologram thereof? You know, this technology is going to be embraced. I don't see a trend of people rejecting it or being cautiously applying it or anything like that.
Not at all, yeah. I mean, agreed, yeah. Alan, can I say one thing? I wanted to tag on the last thing I said, and I got into a grandpa rambly fit. Just that if the intelligence organizations and all these people that we consider through the way they run their corporations and what that does to the earth and what that does to their employees and stuff like that, and then these other organizations that are just, you know, evil or trying to win the next Cold War that or whatever, the technology in place and all the control mechanisms in place allow us to really easily imagine if we applied this more to a direct Gnostic themes and we're thinking that the bad guys are going to be aliens or robots or alien robots or whatever. Everything's already in place that if you controlled the human agencies that control the technology, which absolutely controls and watches every aspect of what we do, then you, like an intelligence organization trying to take over a new region back in the day or whatever, have already fully infiltrated everything you need to slide the alien hands into the gloves of all of these agencies or even possess the people in, you know, some kind of Johnny Quest or X-File sense or whatever, so that they are just thinking in that patriarchal, only the strong survive, you know, military, paranoid, Cold War obsessed mindset, then the aliens never need to reveal themselves. But secondly, the evil people who think like we think bad Gnostic aliens should think, or the agencies that may control them already have everything in place to do so. I don't know. I think that we think of it like it's gonna be aliens, we're gonna see them in motherships first because Hollywood's programmed us to think that. And then if it's gonna be robots, we'd have to have 80 more Atlas robots being put on Facebook every day with machine guns and glowing red eyes for it to click in that militaries all over the world are trying to all have their own DARPA projects, and they all have functioning multiple different robot armies. You know,
is the Atlas evolving. Is the Atlas the dog-like thing?
No, it's the I'm getting a little confused here, but I believe it's the taller one that has almost like an action figure looking rectangular
okay.
shape. And it's been learning how to get over more those. Rocky.
Yeah, I've seen those. The one that, I'll be honest, the one that scares the shit out of me is the one that looks like a dog. Because, yeah. Like, they'll, you know, that one, that's, for years I've been watching the development of that, and it's gotten so fucking good. And, you know, they can kick it and try and knock it down and slide it down a hill and, you know, and that thing, my mind goes to old science fiction. Do you guys remember Fahrenheit 451, the robotic dog that chases him throughout that? I mean, that's a sort of cheesier, older version of it, but that's, you know, I feel like that's almost like more... I expect to see the dog thing on patrol before I expect to see the biped on patrol. It's probably just easier to keep it moving, keep it from getting knocked over. That would be my assumption. John, this isn't necessarily your area of the sort of science that you dive into, but where's your head at on some of the sort of technology trends as this goes?
Oh, right. Have either of you heard of Metal Gear Solid as a video game series?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Deeply into it, sure. Yeah. Deeply, deeply into it.
So, as douchey as Hideo Kojima, the creator of that series, is, it is incredibly insightful and hits the nail on the head in all sorts of ways. And I think it's Metal Gear Solid 4. I'm pretty sure where Snake is aging and degenerating. And it's like his last hurrah. And yep. I think the main military-industrial complex, like War Machine, is this sort of adaptation of that Boston Dynamics dog. It's like a bipedal, somewhere between that dog and, say, like the Star Wars chicken walker. And these things are basically like policing around the world. And I mean, Metal Gear gets it right in a big picture sort of way beyond just these little specifics. It talks about the privatization of militaries and basically, I mean, explicitly points out shadow government dynamics of the military-industrial complex. And even more conspiratorial stuff like the idea that, like, say, the gold from the Philippines was being used to, like, fund CIA black ops or something from World War II. Even that works its way into the Metal Gear mythos. So it touches on all sorts of really interesting, let's just put it that way, conspiratorial notes. And that's the first thing I think of that. It's like, I'm already thinking along those lines, and Metal Gear probably gets it right as far as like being about 10 to 15 years ahead of everyone.
Yeah, and Call of Duty as well. Call of Duty with that same estimation. So any of the plots of Call of Duty, particularly the ones with David Goyer, they're doing the same thing as Metal Gear Solid, where they're not being fanciful. They're going to all the military organizations and going, yo, what you got 5 years from now? What you got 10 years from now? And then in between there, doing, you know, some combination of Tom Clancy and Jim Marr's work to get what the real story is and still make it exciting. But, you know, the Call of Duties get, while they're revealing the technology from 5 to 10 years from now, as each of the Black Ops games progresses a little more into the future, they started with the, you know, the 60s and moving from mind control programs in the 60s to the ones used later in the sort of operational rooms all across the world, where they would take someone and make them a Manchurian candidate. David Goyer from Dark City and all this other brilliant stuff he's done, you see the same themes he likes to use over and over with the manipulation of memory and stuff. And at the same time, you know, and other aspects of the game or campaign fighting against the future sort of DARPA technology that's owned by a private organization that's run by
I'm sorry, I'm thinking the last Black Ops I played had Kevin, can't think of the actor's name, American Beauty, everything else that means anything. Who's that actor?
Was it Kevin Spacey?
Kevin Spacey, there you are. Kevin Spacey leads up the sort of secret DARPA private organization that wants to become the world's military and finds its way to you know, accomplishing those means by any means possible, if you will. But I don't know where I was going with that, but I just wanted to mention that the Call of Duties are doing the same thing. And what this forms is effectively a bunch more games that are trying to illustrate to everyone details about anything from the Atlas robot to applications of MKUltra that people will not believe ever happened or whatever, you know. But people rarely play the actual game. They want to shoot other people online. Right. The hardcore deep writing and acting and stuff that goes into the games really goes unnoticed. I feel like that's the same way for Metal Gear, because people just think they're playing Star Wars, whatever, you know. They they think they're entirely in a fantasy world and aren't trying to connect anything back home or back to, and people get angry at you for, you know, trying to stop their game and say, dude, I'm just trying to increase my kill count, you know, why are you telling me something about PSYOPs in Vietnam?
I know, it's amazing. It's like there's so much I mean, a lot of the game industry is just crap, but you know, the really good titles always have so much to say, just like a good book does, or any sort of good fiction. It's shedding light on the now. And but the unfortunate thing about video games is, of course, that it's like basically, you know, sort of like what you're talking about, if you want to take it to like an extreme and saying that we're training like holographic people to react to holograms in a specific way, we're getting like neurologically hardwired for that, but we're also creating, I just watched like the documentary on the drone pilots, for example, and the abstraction process that goes into like creating the people that can kill at a distance like this and do it well. And just, I mean, I think one of the guys that came out had over like 1,000 kills or something. It was something grotesque. And I mean, you can only do that from it's hard to do that on the battlefield, but when you have a bunch of pilots just running around that are former video gamers, you know, that just see the entire world in this weird sort of heads up display. So they're a blessing and a curse, obviously. And
but we're a bit of a Death Star, right? Because we're a bit of a Death Star because now we have that much distance between us and the enemy. Then we're in this self-encapsulated little, we have to be doing the right thing, right? Because we're like the Empire, and we do everything really organized. And even though that's basically seemingly Nazi and fascist, it's better than, you know, whatever I'm disassociating myself from what I think the rest of the world is, which has to be a lot worse or something. But the point is, we're striking from a distance. We're destroying people without direct asymmetrical warfare, where we'd have to go in and actually see person for person who's a terrorist and shoot and get shot at. And then we're living in a culture that's, like I'm saying, self-encapsulated, so everyone in the Death Star isn't really going to bother themselves with if they blew up a planet that day. And everyone here doesn't bother themselves with how many civilian kills come back. And then a lot of these drone pilots, and I don't know if the documentary gets into this, regardless of if they were trained to just shoot zombies from a helicopter on video games and transition to a drone pilot, now has a whole new kind of PTSD. And a lot of the data that comes back from the drone pilots, and I'm getting this from the pilots, I'm getting this from the military, what I'm about to say is not me trying to be a hippie, is that they are predominantly civilian kills, that there is not active intelligence that says bomb this block corner, but there's just a sudden order, bomb this block corner, you know. And then when they get, you know, what would have been active intelligence back, they realized that none of those people had any affiliation, even roughly, with what we consider terrorist organizations. So the large ones everyone knows by name. So I don't know where I was going with that, but that situation's really messed up. And I wanted to make the Death Star comparison because there's a little too much black sun in the American flag right now. So I feel like we have to cut back and examine some things a little more closely.
And the Empire is obviously wrong to its logical conclusion. And we're wrung to a logical conclusion in a time and a place. And so, you know, Dick's insight, that, I mean, that's one of my favorite things about Dick. It's like, oh, Rome never ended. It's, I mean, that's such a beautifully put social awareness, you know, that is what, And he put it in a weird kind of way, and you'd have to pick it out of all the other high weirdness that Valis is. But I was always impressed with that analogy or metaphor, or whatever you call it.
Yeah, I love that timeline and how it keeps going back. And I mean, I've, you know, in my own magical experiments and stuff, tried to channel Philip K. Dick and Valis and things like that. And I got, you know, I could send it to you guys if you want or whatever. But I had a bunch of different experiments and a bunch of different states of consciousness or whatever. I kept coming up with the same data that sort of echoed through Valis and exegesis, you know. And a lot of it I had to just kind of tune out and hypnotize myself and do some automatic writing. And then I went back and I looked at the other material and, you know, was realizing, I don't know how much I was writing some of it before I had even read some of it or whatever, particularly about these cycles in time related to fascism, related to a reappearing solid state intelligence, how that translates to every modern conspiracy theory about technology or the Nazis, into basically, you know, what the X-Files would see as the syndicate or a secret government, or a lot of what we'd consider evil or not well-hearted interest and intentions in one place.
Did I lose you guys?
What's that?
Oh, okay. Oh, I just got. So there's something to this, right? Of like the Valis, the Mark Vauquer's sort of Valis loop, but even, you know, Philip K. Dick, right? As he says, we're sort of trapped in this sort of false sense of time. You mentioned before the school shooters. Do you remember what? James Holmes, the Boston shooter. Do you remember what technology he was doing?
Is that the guy who was the neurophysicist?
James Holmes was trying to figure out how to essentially slow down time, or at least slow down the perception of time. That was his sort of technology. It was basically how to create a time trap, for lack of a better term. Right.
Wow, that's bizarre. I had no idea.
Yeah. He was, I mean, yeah, I don't know if, I assume it's still on the internet, but you could see, like a lecture he gave on the technology he was developing.
Okay, wait, are you sure he's not, he wasn't writing a paper, a thesis or something on the idea that flash players is in the internet video protocol for movies that are embedded or whatever, was the easiest to hypnotize and use to put subliminal, the way it was, I originally read it was like triggering kind of messages into, and did he not have a DARPA parent and a CDC or a DOD parent along with that?
That is very possible. What was, my mind, I'm blurring. What was the, that was the woman up in Braintree that Chris Knowles wrote a lot about. What was, do you know who I'm talking about?
My mind is racing, but I don't.
Yeah, exactly. Chris Knowles, was writing about a woman up in Massachusetts, I believe it is. And I'm sort of blurring their backgrounds in my mind. She also, I think, convicted of murdering one person, but highly suspected of killing a second. And she was one of these top level scientists doing research like that.
Wow. Yeah, the only thing I can comment on that, and Holmes, and where we begin to see a connection, is how many people are working or interested in the applications of this stuff who wind up being not the victims, oddly enough, but the actual
perpetrators, you know,
murderers,
yeah,
or perpetrators,
yeah.
Of these things. And therein, you know, without facts, can someone begin to humor me and see how that would combine with having to change someone's consciousness into thinking that they're absolutely collecting
extracting points out of the bodies they're shooting, and other collected facts. You know, the person was cold, disattached, they didn't move, they didn't change their facial expression. In some instances, they locked their jaw in order to like fire different shots, like someone professional in military, whatever, but they had no training beforehand. They certainly had no training in murdering a person and then another person. And then another person, and having people scream and turn into a total PTSD wreck nightmare and continue to coldly execute people without, you know, I'm not saying that there hasn't ever been just completely total psychopaths who want to kill people or whatever. But I feel like the criteria of someone looking for proof of this kind of stuff because they're curious or they feel that the American people are being done an injustice or whatever, and then wind up, you know, we need some other data. I'm not at all saying I'm right, but I'm not saying these people.
Frank, can I bring this back to sort of a question John was asking earlier about like the mass effect, right? So like we have these isolated incidents of people that like just to be clear, I know for a fact. If you allow me, I'll give you a quick example. I was more into entertaining the sort of mass quasi pop culture brainwashing line of thinking. Up until one day, I was in a bar. I met up with an old friend at this bar, and there was an ex-Marine at the bar. And this guy was really fucking cracked, right? And, you know, tried my best to be polite and entertain him. He was really fucking damaged. And he was talking to me about, and again, he had no, you know, no, he's just saying lots of sort of random stories and whatever about his time in Iraq and all this sort of stuff, but talking about how he was trained to kill and that there would be certain code words that could be said that would make him kill the closest person near to him. So, you know, sort of at first I'm just thinking it's this drunk loudmouth. He's saying, just be careful what you say to me because I could fucking kill you. You know, and I'm like, sure. All right, dude, like, back the fuck off. I'm trying to have a nice drink here, you know. And but then as he gets more and more animated and excited and he's sort of pantomiming and like, clearly, a damaged individual. And then at some point he said he was in a situation where someone, I don't know, pushed him or something, and he starts to choke the person, and some guy that was in the military with him said these series of numbers, and then he was like, and he said the code to basically make me stand down, and then he like almost like powering down a robot, and he acts out this thing where he just, you know, and now he just stands there completely limp and glassy-eyed. So basically tell me, if he starts to kill someone at this bar, just say this thing and it'll stop him and all this sort of stuff, right? And I'm just like looking at this guy going, okay, yes, mind control, very fucking real. But what kind of torture did they have to put this man through and you know, abusive training to get him to this point? Can the same thing be done in a, you know, Rihanna music video or whatever? I don't think so. And I'm not saying that's what you're proposing. I'm just saying, using that sort of frame of the conversation, what would it, you know, like, I guess what I'm asking is, in your opinion, what would it take to get someone to that level of brainwashing as compared to when we talk about a mass effect psyop or something, you know what I mean? Like actual control.
We're talking about the difference between
hands-on TBMC or trauma-based mind control, and the contrast between that and getting everyone to step on the worldview wagon and increase and entice that with technology. So this individual sounds to me, if he's speaking the truth and didn't read it in a conspiracy book or the literature from the military, that he's along with hundreds of thousands of other people all over the world, is taken as a child, fractured, his mind is made into a computer. They make sure he makes the varsity football team, and they make sure that he has a certain image of himself with a certain other programmed blonde girlfriend throughout high school that winds up marrying him and things like that, only to have the sort of support system where the machine is waiting to be beckoned to war and the programming's already there. All you need, if you didn't want to do this to him in Iraq and forget the little kid thing, is a programmer or handler, the handler language, whereby you're triggering him or you're talking him down. And if you want to know the sort of terms where you're saying, okay, someone's mind is a computer, and we're gonna use terms to trigger or talk them down, and that sounds retarded. I would go to Fritz Springmeier's work, and I'm not saying Fritz Springmeier is someone to base your worldview off of, but certainly he's the only person who's been able to come back home with some of this language. And just since I started a couple weeks ago learning computer history and the history of building computers and stuff like that, am I realizing that the same individuals who were coming up with the formulas for and literally building the first computers were also the individuals on the Atomic Commission who set off the nuclear test at Trinity on my birthday, and were the same individuals who were in the Majestic 12? And when I look at their computer literature,
your birthday is July 16th?
Else, yes, sir.
Holy shit. Okay.
Launch of Project Serpo, yeah. 300 other things.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's an important date. For damn
but if
sure.
you want to make somebody Mulder, make sure that they think they were born on July 16th. Anyway, so the whole idea there. Off. Wait, what's that?
I didn't mean to cut you off. That took me by surprise. That's a big date for me.
Oh, no, you're all good. No, it's a dude. That date's at the top of your apocalypse blog. I think that got me started on the apocalypse trip.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I see you're talking X-Men Apocalypse, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I think that's where you're at. I think you're saying that the issue where Apocalypse is identifying himself with Set was a July 16th issue, if I can remember correctly.
Is that true? I don't know. I don't recall that. I really don't recall that, but it's possible.
So if you start wrapping into that, how much Chris Claremont and elements of the X-Men insist, even in Deadpool, on relaying this message to me, relaying this message to everyone, that you have to traumatize a person, hopefully at a very young age, to, in all sorts of physical, horrible, terrible ways, to get them to boost or suddenly prompt their powers that didn't exist before. You're going to make them appear by sort of traumatizing them out of the person. And then this is only made more polite by saying that I'm sorry, I forgot my other point was there. But so Fritz Springmeier has all this in his books. He's got the terms for what triggers a person, what turns a person off. And then since I started learning all the computer history, I'm realizing that if you divorce everything I just said from the computer history by itself. So yes, these are the Manhattan Project guys. yes, they're the Majestic 12, but forget that for a second. So they're just the guys that built the original computers. They insist on, and I know this seems only logical at first, but once you get through a couple of different books and it's starting to deeply disturb you, you'll see what I'm talking about. They insist on everything about the computer being made from a master-slave relationship, the master part of the computer controlling the slaves, and the slaves all being subservient and whatever. And this is the way Fritz Springmeier, in his book, mind-controlled, undetectable slave, some combination of those words therein, is basically the way he's saying that they control the computers that they put, or they replace people's minds with, or in other words, they build a framework out of what we call a core personality. They split that into a million pieces and then sort of organize that so it it's as organized as a computer. The person is unconscious of all this going on, of course, particularly between ages 3 and 5, when you really want to get in there and start doing it, according to the church, military, satanic ritual abuse, alien abduction, etc., to kickstart their whatever is going on here in the real world. And I may stop there because I'm sorry. So the only major difference is that when you're building a computer in someone's mind, if you sort of lock everything up, instead of a password that you chose or the person chose, or instead of like a screen name or however we think of that, you're encoding everything with, you know, demons from the Geisha and all these different Western occult texts. And doing this through so many different shadowy organizations that aren't just people at the top that we're thinking of, oh, okay, so 3 scientists are walking around the world that carried on Mengele's technique and, you know, traumatized people in this way. No, this is like a huge, huge thing. It's something that if you gave the controls, so to speak, on how to do this to organized crime and the Vatican or whatever, they might not hesitate in using it. But certainly with military, satanic ritual abuse, alien abduction, it doesn't stop. It seems to be a theme that the X-Men seems to be that insistent on trying to remind us of.
So, taking this to a space of, and I, you know, how do I say this? Into a space of philosophy, for lack of a better term. You know, the questions, again, these are real world intrigues, for lack of a better term, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm interested then. You know, you mentioned trying different magical techniques, trying to essentially opening yourself up to altered states of consciousness to try and get a message through. One would almost think a man who's been doing the kind of research you have been would, you know, be walking around with some sort of Faraday cage over his head or something, you know. And I don't mean that as like, I'm not trying to make fun of you. I'm just saying, like, one would think you would be trying to resist any kind of message being sent into you. But, you know, being familiar with the Philip K. Dicks, the John Willies, and stuff like that, you know, you're sort of, you know, got to be acutely aware that there's, again, whether it's trustworthy or not, if it's even real or not, people reporting these quasi-positive experiences, if we can call them that, or I guess my question to you is, you know, how do you separate that out in the sense of being open to, I don't mean to put it in black and white terms, but, you know, the quote-unquote positive transmission, how do we get to parse that?
I get what you're saying, and I actually meant to address this before when you were arranging the words a certain way, but again, Grandpa started rambling in another direction, probably technical and factual as far as I think. But I think that has a lot to do with Jan Irvin and whatever his thing is with making sure that no aspect of the 60s counterculture is left innocent or able to be enjoyed as art. and you know, everything has to be this cold link to the CIA and blah blah. So I don't dis, you know, I really look up to like Terrence McKenna and Robert Ant Wilson and stuff like that, as to whether they took CIA money to do something or were involved in a thing or whatever. I don't factor into as much as, okay, their work is super beneficial for everyone. But then when we start to move into Timothy Leary and John C. Lilly insisting on using terms that are only digital, cyber, that software, consciousness is software, that our bodies is hardware, that they seem to be embracing the same what if we roboticized humanity thing as I'm saying these military elements are, it's very curious to me. I don't know what to make of that. But I think that between like with John C. Lilly, is offering us so much more. And I even subscribe to these ideas of thinking of consciousness as software and stuff like that. It's really helped me, even in Tim Leary's, you know, silly sense. But I think that through Jan Ervin and through us, the whole Sync community and all these other directions, you can find out, you know, the facts about who they were really taking money from and who they were really contracted by and whatever. And I don't know. I seem to be more suspicious of people who headed up the projects, the Andreeja Puharics and I don't know, Hal Puthoffs or something, and getting into remote viewing and other sort of related areas. I think they were more co-opted. And then when you get into talking to dolphins or passing out acid or whatever, I feel like that was, they let these people go. Jan Ervin might be right in trying to create an archaic revival, one where, you know, we just become cavemen all dancing around flowers on us and the
can I stop you there? Like, just sure. So, like, right. So Lil even says that the solid state intelligence, the quote unquote bad guys, their goal is to make, and I'm not defending Lilly or whatever. And John, you've just been on a Lilly reading kick not too long ago, so you can sort of please jump in at any moment. But again, you know, just sort of throwing out there, SSI, quote unquote bad guys, solid state intelligence, their stated goal, their mission is to roboticize humanity. Lilly's saying that's a bad thing, right? He's not saying that's his goal. He's saying that's the goal of these bad interdimensional creatures or some shit like that, right?
The opposite of Echo, certainly.
Right. Yeah. So, but it's just like he's saying this idea of roboticizing humanity is a bad thing. He's not promoting that. He's saying it's a bad thing. And then when you see
other than using terms that seem to be obsessed with computers, right. Yes, you're correct.
And
sorry to cut off.
But then, and then even things like you know, the archaic revival, the sort of McKenna type thing. You know, one would almost. And again, I know it's like a Hegelian dialectic that I don't want to get caught in, but that you would almost see, hey, if the roboticizing of humanity is the evilest end result, how do we backpedal from that? How do we get back in touch with nature and humanity and all that sort of stuff? When I see right, so the archaic revival is almost. Would seem as the quote-unquote logical antidote to the solid-state intelligence. And yet, again, we're trapped in this Hegelian dialectic where the guy, if someone says, hey, we need to backpedal away from this, Jan Ervin or some other schmuck can come in and say, oh, look, see, he's trying to get you into being a brainless Neanderthal, you know. Or if he's using the technological term, you go, see, he's going to turn you into this technological control state. It's like people can sort of slap whatever they – if they don't like you, they'll fucking stick a label on you. It doesn't really matter. But I guess what I'm sort of trying to get at here is I'm not a technophobe, and I'm not you know, I like my indoor plumbing. I'm not you know, I'm not trying to turn away from technology, and at the same time, you know, there's pros and cons to everything. Everything seems to be a sort of double-edged sword, and I guess what I'm trying to get at here is it almost seems using terms like the software, hardware, our terms change as our technology. Look, even like comic books, right? Or your science fiction. You could follow a trend in science fiction and fantasy stories where, you know, people have talked about how, like, say, Dracula, right? Bram Stoker writes Dracula at the time as we're beginning to understand blood and blood-borne illnesses and viruses and stuff like that. So that was the science fiction was based somewhat on the science of the day. We get, you know, how many giant radioactive ants and worms and tarantulas and whatever came about during the atomic age, right? It was like, hey, Spider-Man gets his powers from a radioactive spider. Then we, you know, when they make the Spider-Man movie in the late 90s, early 2000s, whenever that was, right, they change it to DNA. Oh, you know, the DNA of the spider actually gets in him because that's our current technology. And it almost seems like that the terminology and the way that we're constantly projecting our current level of understanding onto these almost eternal questions. So I'm less bothered by someone using computerized terminology than I am by someone promoting computerized thought, which I would almost actually argue Jan Ervin, and I don't even make this fucking about him, but you know, like trying to control the way people think and say, this is the acceptable way to think, this is not the acceptable way to think, don't look at this information. Even his sort of fractured trivium is, which, you know, at its core is a really good idea, but when he sort of puts his own fist and mold onto that trivium to sort of say, this is how you should be thinking. You think this step first, then this step, then whatever. It basically is a computerized system of logic. That to me, in one respect, is actually scarier than, you know, trying to use an analogy of the technology of the day, if that's...
That's genuine roboticism, whereas you could just say, well, this person's using transhumanist language and therefore they're part of the transhumanist agenda, which is absurd. It's the most superficial critique you could ever do, and so easily refuted if you actually read any of these guys' books. Because Prometheus Rising, for example, Robert Anton Wilson, he's describing the brain as hardware and software, and he italicizes a sentence like several times. This is a metaphor. We're not saying it is a computer. We're saying, you know, it reminds us of it.
He's picking up on Tim Leary's circuit model repeatedly in that book.
It's useful. It's like we need models.
Absolutely.
Full things. Yeah. So, and Lilly and Leary and Wilson, again, you can critique the words they use, but then they celebrate people like Gurdjieff and Reich, and who speak directly to the mechanical nature of humanity and how backwards it is and how robotic we are. Yeah. And how all their methodologies for exploring inner space are designed to undo that. I mean, Christopher Hyatt, like, he wrote a book called Undoing Yourself. That's the heart of the matter. That's like, it's the non-political way of going about it has always been occultism. And so they're the most recent incarnation of that. It's not a cult. It's much more couched in genuine physiological understanding and so on. But
yeah, and like psycho-spiritual technology, and that goes back to when you're talking about initiations and pain and trauma. You know, Grant Morrison's Invisibles paints 30 different ways you can do that to yourself or in a tribe without harming yourself. You're forcing yourself through some pain or psychedelic experience or whatever to get to that place where you're activated, you're turned on, in Tim Leary's words. And I got to run back of the house for seconds, and I'm going to be right back on the call. But I just wanted to add real quick that Jan Ervin, I think, is one of these personalities, possibly a lot like myself, who would rather just paint everything like a super horrible rainy day where the Nazis already won and there's, you know, triangular craft above and the world's going to end any second. But that's because that's his personality, wants to function with this information in such a way. He wants to function with other people in such a way where he's just constantly coming in any party and, you know, turning all the lights on and going, don't you guys know that there's poison in these drugs you're doing and the music's controlling your mind? And in that thought process, you know, I listen to Terrence McKenna for like hours upon end. And if the guy mentions thinking of things like neurological processes or whatever as mechanical, he makes some comparison. He's saying like there's a billion other smart ideas and influences and things that people can go out and learn about. And none of those make me feel like, oh, that's why people wear sandals today. You know, that's why there's so many vegetarians who are rushing to the archaic revival because he was trying to teach us to be cavemen. And I don't see any de-evolution plot on his part at all. So to think that when he says a term like archaic revival, you can just run with that all the way to the other side of the field and go, I got it, archaic revival. It means he's trying to turn us all into, you know, pipe smoking idiots who wear sandals. I don't know. Wait, I'll be right back in a second, you guys. I'm sorry.
You can.
Right.
So John, I'm curious. You've been I remember you, and correct me if I'm wrong, because we haven't spoken that much in the last few months, but you were on a sort of John Willie reading spree a little bit there, right?
Yeah, I've read Metaprogramming and the Human Biocomputer, Quiet Center, Center of the Cyclone. I think that's it. So just a few, but I mean, that's the heart of his work. I mean, and I've read everyone that's been into him, so.
What did you take as far, so like as you mentioned, Robert Anton Wilson is sort of making the point over and over, hey, this is a metaphor. If anything, right, Robert Anton Wilson particularly, he's not doing the end or gate standard computer model. He's saying maybe logic, right? You should be open to multiple quantum realities. What did and I have not read Lilly's work. What is sort of his spin on that?
Well, he goes even bigger than just saying, I mean, he says, hey, try on completely different belief systems about the experience you're having. He says, hey, most of the time, my bias is to see what I'm experiencing as just a byproduct of my physiology, and that's mirrored in my psychological processes. And that's the standard materialistic perspective, right? He says, okay, that's my, like, I guess my anchor point. But then he'll write other parts of the books where he's like, but then in other cases, there's more utility to think that there's life after death and that my consciousness is not just in my body. And so he judges points of view based on just the utility and the context that they find themselves in. So in the same way, he's telling you to be flexible and organic and spontaneous in how you engage with new experiences and new places, which again is totally antithetical to robotic, rigid, conservative, reactionary type approaches to thinking. So that in and of itself goes even, I mean, that's like case in point. So even he is encouraging something that's antithetical to the idea of turning people into these transhumanist zombies. I mean, it's nonsense. It's just not, it's total nonsense. And yeah, I can't speak to all the details of it because it doesn't even matter. It's like if Hitler says 2 + 2 = 4, no one's going to question it, right? That's a truth, no matter whose mouth it's coming out of. And people can cross-reference what Lilly or Wilson or anyone else, us, is saying and judge for themselves what like they think is reality when it comes to like human nature and so on, and why we're in the predicaments we're in. The questions go rather deep, and people are very superficial, so they never get to it. They never get to the heart of it. But like, yeah, no, Lily is in the same. He's in the same way, and you see why. They, I mean, he influenced Wilson and so on. So that's my view of it, and him.
You guys, I just wanted to share something real quick. Obviously, I'm back. I was looking over the while I was looking at all the history of computer stuff. I found a oop, might have the document right here, but I found a just an intelligence report from what is this 2012, where they're just talking about roboticizing people and groups of people and predicting behavior. And they go from essentially the master-slave relationship and the history of computers all the way up to I'm sorry, I'm looking at the document right now, which I can send to you guys. But the point is they're it's just the most dehumanizing survey of like how can we make everything or everyone rather a little more robotic through the use of all these computers. And it's stuff like this that I read every year that, you know, allow me to not put down these theories about, well, they're trying to make Metropolis. They're trying to do the lawnmower man RFID thing from the second film. You know, they're not deviating at all from their Orwellian plot, you know.
Hey, Frank, you mentioned Lawnmower Man. I've never seen Lawnmower Man 2, by the way. Maybe I have to. Is it any good?
Yeah, well, no, it's not a good movie. It's not a good movie, right? But like because it's pulp crap, because it's the kind of thing that isn't a main
Oh, you don't even have
Jack.
to explain. Listen, the first movie isn't even that good, and I fucking adore it. So,
Okay, well, cool. Yeah, it's just the second movie is like, what if we took all those big ideas from the first one and just focused them all on, like, you do know what the New World Order technocracy, when referred to such, refers to in reference to smart cities, don't you? And if that's
curious, then you're that's curious sounding to you. You should watch the movie for how many times they name drop, something old, only William Cooper was willing to be brave enough to supposedly warn us about or whatever, you know.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, I and John even heard me say this earlier today, but I mean, I reference one particular scene in One More Man, the first One More Man, obviously, as probably the most I don't know, a super, I don't want to say the most, but like a super important life lesson for us in our sort of media saturated and digital swimming society is there's a thing where Pierce Brosnan says to the One More Man, he's like, you need to stop and process, basically. He's like, you just keep taking in information, taking in information, taking in information. He's like, but what good is it learning if you haven't stopped to then think about what it means, right? And that to me is a, man, that's such a fucking, like, I just see it all the time, particularly you hop onto any kind of social media or anything, and you just, people spewing out new data and sucking up new data, but where is the pause button? Where's the, like, sit and quietly contemplate, ramifications and such?
And to go further with that, because we've already talked about Philip Dick, in the end of Valis, which is a just a condensed version of his exegesis, the appendix, he says that all humans are just memory coils that take in information, they refine it or change it in some way, and put it back out into the universe, and it keeps, it's this like nonlinear system that feeds into itself. It's a perpetual motion machine, right? But everything is
Computer.
shaping else at once. And so it's like, that's essentially what's going on. To what end, who knows? But you can't get much simpler, more straight to the point than that. And like, just see how people respond to information nowadays. It's like, yeah, of course, we're addicted to it in a way, but we have no temperance or discernment.
It's that disassociative state that people are trying to build in these children when they're ripping them apart mentally, that can be enacted upon throughout a lifetime of, text messages, ridiculous commercials, and to be quite frank, distractions, but that's disassociation. So you're already totally prone to disassociation. You're already prone to not be in the experience you're having now. And then, for the rest of your life, you're obsessed with the idea of, oh man, someone's talking, but they're starting to talk about politics. Oh, this commercial. That'll distract my eyes enough from my hand to realize I need to take out my phone and look at anything. You know what I'm saying? And it's a constant, you no one's focusing in on anything. No one has an attention span. I say no one, and I have these negative generalizations like I'm Yann Urban, but I'm talking about all of the people I physically interact with in real life. It's an overwhelming amount of people who are all of my best friends, family members, anyone, regardless of how close to me, is constantly racing to, I don't know, ask me a question about the Illuminati, let's say, right? And I begin to clarify my thoughts on that. When I say begin, I mean like two or three words exit my mouth. And I'm like a big grandpa talker, so I totally understand if cats want to go from like, Frank Zero is about to ramble again. Let me just check my Facebook because I don't feel like going through this. But they're actually going like from their Facebook to a text message to something else, and then they'll be like, "Oh, sorry, dude, I didn't hear anything you said. I had to respond back to this text message." And I'm like, "It's no worries. That's why I stopped talking, so I could just wait for you to finish whatever you were doing." And then, "No, it's cool. You can keep talking." Is everyone's response, and then they engage in more apps. They don't put their phone away and look up at me. They more distracted. And then I walk around the streets and I just see that happening with, they meant to be watching football, but they're checking their phone, but they're
Oh,
pretending to
totally,
listen
yeah.
to their friends. And so we're in a disassociative society
It's a
where people are
fractured.
obsessed.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I work in a restaurant. I see people sit at the bar. They sit in front of a TV, put on the sports channel, but they're talking to someone else on their phone. Yes, they're doing three things at once. But then, I remember the first time that I really noticed this was being on a bus, and they're like, the woman in the seat in front of me had I don't know, a tablet or a laptop or something, and she was watching a movie on her laptop or tablet, whatever. But then she kind of like shrunk the screen down into like the corner, and she was like writing an email and checking Facebook. And they're like, "How much are you paying attention to this fucking movie?" And I'm sure it was I'm sure it was a shitty movie. My point is, like, as someone, like, I'll be honest, it hit me as like someone who likes to make media. I'm like, what capacity is anyone even watching? And granted, Hollywood is pumping out total fucking garbage. But, you know, and someone could argue, well, if they made something really good, they'd pay attention to it or whatever. No, I don't even think so. It's like people, it's just one more thing moving on the screen. There's a face there. But afterwards, you're going to say, you liked that movie? You didn't like that movie? Are you going to claim you watched that movie? I don't think you fucking saw it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, agreed. And it's also the way that, you know, I was listening to you and I was staring directly at our conversation on Skype that we're having below the actual session. And there's a flashing ad to the side of my screen I wasn't expecting at all. And it reminds me of how much that's going on Facebook or any given website you go to or whatever. And that's essentially conditioning us, even though we go on the website and we go, oh, that's annoying on the right side of the screen. I'm just going to focus on what I was doing. We're much more likely to go to the next thing we're doing and being like, oh, I can do three things at once, you know? And what it really comes down to is a serious lack of consideration for the other human beings around us. And I'm sure someone's thinking, you know, I'm butthurt because no one wants to listen to me in real life or something. But I'm saying I observe this everywhere with every other person type of media. If I'm not involved in the situation at all, I'm just watching someone half-ass a grin, a giggle to their friend because they could pick up by the tone of voice that their friend was trying to say something that's supposed to register as funny. So they laugh at them while sort of more viciously hacking away at whatever text message or thing they're writing on the internet or whatever. And then they'll stop the person from laughing or talking and mention something they see online or turn their phone around on the person's sentence and be like, look at this kitty I just saw on Facebook. That's got to be worth shutting you up. And, you know, it's all just being distracted by another kitty for a minute. But I feel like we all have the internet. We would have seen that kitty because we all have a similar Facebook feed. We're friends. So it gets so redundant and ridiculous. But yeah, I'm super worried for just people's attention spans, but more so how it applies to other people. When other people get on the bus, am I going to be able to talk to them? No. In fact, when somebody gets on the bus, everybody else is going to look a little deeper into their phone. Please don't sit next to me. I don't want to look you in the eye. I don't want to have a social interaction. I came on the bus with headphones. I'm staring at my phone. There's no possible way, you know, someone would see this as a context to bother me. And that's sort of everyone. Everyone on, you know, in New Orleans, in public transportation, when I get on the bus or streetcar, that's the situation. I watch person, you know, it could be an old person getting on, a drunk, insane New Orleans, you know, how do you say, when people travel to another place, they're a tourist. Or it could just be, you know, a New Orleans regular, somebody that's a friend of yours, whatever. And regardless, if you knew this person from high school or anything, everybody's going to collectively move their phone a little closer to them and maybe glance out the side of their phone to see, okay, what kind of people are, you know, exiting the streetcar. Okay, that's only confirmation that I want to seem more wrapped up in what I'm doing. And that just worries me because I see it in, you know, an old lady will fall down or somebody will drop something and everybody moves the phone a little closer to their face. You know, where I feel like when I was growing up, three people would have felt the need to jolt out of the place they were sitting and ask the lady if she'd like to sit there and pick the thing up for her. So I'm just worried about where that goes into the zombie technocratic future. You know, how prone will we be to just walk right over each other's bodies or whatever in a mass panic, and how can you apply that to every situation? You know?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I'm from New York, where mass transit is a big part of everyday existence, and I've seen different trends. You know, people put the as you said, we all have the same Facebook feed, so I undoubtedly you have seen there's like a picture of a bunch of people on like a bus or a train reading a newspaper, and they're like, and they said it was going to make people antisocial, or you know, like it's implying people have always, they've been reading newspapers, but now they're looking at their cell phones or whatever, right?
Yeah, that's about, yeah.
And I've seen that image and I've seen that argument, but I could tell you, I mean, there's definitely, it's the cell phone advance has changed the game in that respect. And just my observation, again, even being a New Yorker, I mean, you could still, you know, meet people and start conversations or, you know, pick up girls or whatever the fuck you were trying to do. You know, there was still human interaction, even if a lot of people shut off interaction, some people don't. And there was always, you know, there was a humanity to it.
Nobody in the 50s, like, moved their newspaper away and was like, hold on one second, and began reading the newspaper while trying to hear what your human concern was. And nobody on the other receiving end of that would be like, what are you doing? You reading that book or are you talking to me? You know, exactly. And that was two different things. And so I'm sorry to cut you off. You were saying.
No. I'm just saying I am with you in the respect that I think that the cell phone has in a lot of ways changed that game. But there's the other side of it, and I'm going to use the technological metaphor here. It's like, and I'm not going to pretend for a minute that I'm any better. But you know, like let's say. But I will say that I will make an attempt to try and be better is like, say, you know, if you go on vacation with somebody and they're taking pictures, and there's, like I said, there's nothing wrong with taking pictures on vacation or anything like that. But like, I think of it in technological stance. I say, you know, okay, so your memory card on your phone or on your camera, your digital camera, if we go back a few more years, you know, can hold 8,000 pictures. How many images can you keep in your mind? What is the storage capacity of the human brain? You know, your optics, your optic nerves are going to be more powerful than even an HD camera. You know, maybe we'll be surpassed soon, but I'm just saying, like, this idea of, even if you think of it in terms of the technology, make an effort to use it. I remember when I was a kid, you know, I had all my friends' phone numbers memorized. Now the only person I probably have, I have my wife's phone number memorized, and I have, like, my mom and my grandmother who have had the same phone number for fucking 30 years, you know. I don't know anyone else's phone number off the top of my head because the phone stores it, right? You have this basically the external hard drive for your brain as opposed to trying to use the hard drive that you came with. And again, so using these technological terms, but I guess my point is you can exercise them, use them, and appreciate them, that you don't, the phone doesn't have to remember it for you. That's a Philip K. Dick title, right? We can remember it for you wholesale. You know, I don't need the phone or the camera or the computer or anything to remember it for me to try and hold on to some of my own memories. There's just something, call that an archaic revival or whatever you want to call that. I just feel like it's as we go further and further into a world where we can't trust our memories, our thoughts, our environment, perhaps our making our memories will be the only thing that we can hold on to, you know. But if we stop trying to make our own memories, that's a frightening development.
Well, we're stopping making the memories because we're not having the real experience, because we so much would rather haphazardly document it by taking out our phone and throwing it on Instagram, whatever. And I feel like, I don't know, what my grandfather used to do on family trips with his obsession with his camera and getting everybody by a statue and smiling and taking a picture is still even vast jumps from what you're explaining now, where you know, we're almost talking about solid state storage and the you know, actual parts of a computer before we get into that too much. But essentially we're replacing the experience with trying to document the experience. We're not good at having experiences anymore as much as we are reporting them to everyone else on social networks. The experiences and the memories and the humanity all begin to suffer there. And that gets in, I guess, where this conversation would go if we had three more hours or whatever, but where all my work is starting to point me, that in fact, there's much more of an interest and an easy way to roboticize everyone's mind and turn them into, even though they're still showing emotions, like, I don't know, some sort of cartoon character being electrocuted to go from one to the other and not real emotions in the way that I see. We're not really allowed real emotions too much more in public, to be honest, or as human beings or whatever, only the acceptable emotions that, you know, would go alongside rave culture or politically correct social network posting,
distracted the hell out of myself. But the point is, the roboticizing of people, the roboticizing of their minds, and us all becoming kind of zombies, regardless of whether we're talking about something poignant and obvious like Black Friday, or just everyone sitting around in one room but in different countries playing the same video game or whatever. I think that the danger of us becoming robotic or robot-like is already so far surpassed that there's no need for the physical external android or robot itself, and there's no need to go implanting things or put silly helmets with wires or Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind or Total Recalling anyone if most of the public is swallowing up the roboticization. If we police each other in the way that COINTELPRO meant us to, but now on such a massive scale that you talk about one of 300 topics and the people around you are very likely to shut you down in a way that they don't know they've been trained to. And that gets really scary, and that gets kind of back into all the mind control research and stuff like that. There's actually like a color coding system whereby they're like, well, most people in society are interested in football and they watch the Saw movies and they believe in this much 10th grade textbook science. So then when you bring them the idea of UFOs or the mind control, it's obviously been implemented on them, or a secret history of World War II that you can show them in books and facts and whatever, they're already trained to look at someone else in the room, make eye contact, giggle. One of them will say tinfoil hat, something or other. The other one will say conspiracy theorist. More people may enter the circle jerk of wanting to make fun of the person who has the sort of different ideas. And it's like I'm saying, it's entirely policed within the society by itself, with the way the society is supposed to think they're being proper and natural and even polite.
It's totally self-policing. I'll give you, I'm a perfect example. I mean, I have found for myself in the last year, particularly in the last year, you know, me doing my job. I mean, I go to my job. I don't say really anything, and I avoid any kind of conversation like that. I retreat back into my home where I can have online conversations like this, but I, you know, I'm sort of, well, and to be blunt, I mean, I put on a fucking, essentially put on a fucking costume to go to work. You know, I, for lack of a better term, you know, I put gel in my hair and shave my face and put on a shirt and look like somebody else. And that's, I'm just there to do that job and make the money and get the fuck out of there. And I try very hard not to ever say or do anything that, you know, that's anything outside of the normal, because I'm just, hey, I'm just here for the paycheck. I'm not trying to convince anyone anything. I'm not trying to have this conversation. I'm not trying to anything. And there's something that's occasionally, you know, even though it's an intentional strategy for me, and it's from a survival stance, it's a frightening realization from time to time that I don't even, like, if I ever think about it, it's like, that's horrifying that I could never be myself in that space. And, you know, that we as people in this society have policed ourselves, neutered ourselves, censored ourselves to such an extent that no one wants to be an actual expressive person, you know, just, you know, go along to get along. And there's something, you know, sort of, again, that's something I'm gonna have to sit with and process. And as far as, you know, changing the subject or stopping the conversation, I've pushed this as far as I can time wise. I don't know what you guys want to do, but like I said, I really got to hop off here.
Well, I can't record anymore, so I think we should probably end up.
Yeah, and I'm that's hoping good. The recorder worked. It says we're going, but John, I tried to record something earlier today that didn't work, and I'm just send your prayers, or, you know, let's all say sorry for insulting you, solid state intelligence. Please work for us at this moment. And,
like, we depend on you so often. Right. to even keep in touch. They turn off the internet and we're all just immediately alienated to the point where we don't know what to do but stay in our rooms.
Exactly. As I'm saying, I'm not, you know, I don't, I think it's wrong to totally demonize all technology, because in this respect, it's been, it's allowed the three of us to have this conversation tonight, and and let's be blunt, we wouldn't even know each other if it weren't for the technology. So in that respect, it's definitely it's a tool, and it can be used to bring people together, and it can be used to tear humanity apart. So it's whatever. I'm not trying to go on another rant. I'm just saying, keep your fingers crossed. I hope this recorded, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. So,
yep, nice sure, man.
As always, thank you, guys.
Good talking to you again, John.
All right, see ya.
Night, Frank. Bye.
Peace.
And tell them I cried, and tell them I died of the same. And when I die, don't pay the preacher for speaking of my glory and my fame. Just see what the boys in the room, and tell them I sighed, and tell them I cried, and tell them I died of the same.